Looking good. Interesting question. How much money have you spent so far in your life aiming to look good, feel good? How much money do you think you will invest into the future or in the future to make sure that you either stay looking good, that you get as healthy, fit and strong as you possibly can be, that you look as good as you possibly can, and that you shall age beautifully, gracefully, gorgeously, whatever your plan is as you get older? And it's a really interesting question, because if you ask the experts, the marketing folks, the people that study what we spend money on, we are now in a $1 trillion business. So if you add up gym memberships, personal trainers, plastic surgery, nutritional supplements, food, clothes, cosmetics, everything that we put into our life or we purchase to look good is a $1 trillion industry. I don't even know how much that is. So what are you getting? What's the return on your investment? So if you're spending money on looking good, feeling good, being healthy, fit and strong, and you want to age beautifully, will you get your money's worth? It's a great question. And for me, this is a very personal conversation. Something that I don't usually want to talk about, have no desire to talk about, but every day, and I'm sure you do too, people ask me how to look good, how to feel good, how to have more energy, how to be happy, and how to stay young for as long as possible. And my answer has always been whatever works for you. And as an exercise professional, that's a really interesting answer, I know that. But have you ever experienced controversy, contradicting information, arguments, people disagreeing with each other about how to get healthy, how to be fit, how to be strong, how to look good? And that's everything from plastic surgeons will argue, cosmetic folks will argue, beauticians will argue, exercise professionals and personal trainers, of course, will argue. And then the people who are meant to understand our health, they argue. So whether it's an endocrinologist for your hormones, a cardiologist for your heart, an orthopedic surgeon for your bones, exercise physiologist for your muscles, they all argue. There's so much information about how to be healthy, fit and strong, how to look good, how to feel good, how to have energy, and how to age gracefully. And if you have a look at anti-aging, that in itself is a $1 billion industry. It seems that those of us who are now older, we want to stay young. We want to stay looking young. And people invest or waste a lot of money on trying to stay young. Everything from anti-wrinkle cream to intense and severe plastic surgery so that we stay looking young. So my question is this: what are you going to do? What do you want to do? How do you want to live your life? Do you want to be a healthy, fit, strong human being that can fight germs, bugs, viruses, and diseases? Do you want to have a stack of energy? Do you want to perform at your best? Do you want to look good? And do you want to get the results that you want from whatever it is that you invest money in? And do you want a return on that investment? So if you invest $100, what kind of return do you want to get on that $100? And of course, if you go to a financial institution and you give them $100 and they are going to invest it for you, or $1,000 or $100,000, you would expect a return on your investment. You would expect to get more than your money back. You would expect to get more than your money back. So this is very personal for me, because I always ask this question: have you picked a weight? Have you picked a size? Have you picked an energy level? Have you picked a way that you want to look for the rest of your life? And is it possible to be able to do that? And I didn't think so. When I was 18, when I was even 25 and 30, I really thought that by the time I was 40, 50, 60, I would be an old lady. and particularly when you look at how most 40, 50, 60 year old people look, it seems pretty obvious that the human body ages, it slows down, it gets weak, it gets frail, it gets fat, it gets sick, all of those things, or some of those things. And we should expect that to happen to us. However, I just have had a passion all of my life, and I know I'm very privileged because my passion started when I was 10, and I always share this story. My brother's girlfriend shared with me that I was chubby, and I was. I think she said fat. She wasn't quite as kind as chubby. And I decided that I would do something about that because she had told me the truth. I started exercising at the age of 10. I only did the stuff that I knew, which was silly things on the floor like side leg raises and donkey kicks and sit-ups and stuff that I had seen perhaps on television. I'm not even sure. And it wasn't until I was 13. So I exercised every day from the age of 10. By the time I got to 13, I did an upright group exercise to music class. I did aerobics. And I decided from that day forward that not only was this going to be something that I did every day, exercise in the upright position and get excited by it, but I wanted to help other people to feel as good as I did that day. So thus began the study of how does the human body stay healthy, fit, strong? How does it look good? And I will share with you very openly that at 13 and probably all the way to probably even 50, there wasn't too much focus on being healthy or staying young. It was pretty much about being in great shape, having energy and looking good in clothes and out of clothes. That seems to be the focus of the exercise profession. How do I lose weight? How do I have low body fat percentage? How do I have tight butt cheeks? How do I look good? So that was my focus. How does the human body get into it, the physical condition that it will look good? And now that I'm an old lady, and I say that very happily and passionately because I don't feel any different. In fact, I'll rephrase. I feel more healthy, more fit, more strong. I feel more energetic than when I was 20. And I think that's probably expected because as you become wiser and as you become better educated and as you learn and train and keep learning and keep training and keep educating yourself, is it possible that you would learn about or learn more about how to be healthy, fit and strong? So why this is so personal for me is I have shared for a very long time, of course, that if you want to stay young and if you want to be healthy and if you want to look good, that you need to exercise. And I don't think there's too many people that would argue with that. There's some people that just think it's all about food. So if you eat healthy food, you'll have a healthy body for the rest of your life. The challenge with that, of course, is that you can't get fit and you can't get strong by eating food. And the only things that keep our entire body systems, all of them, healthy, fit and strong is, of course, to get fit and to get strong. And to get fit, you've got to get puffed. To get strong, you've got to overload. And I'm not sure why we have made it any more complicated than that. I certainly did for a very long time because I got caught up in the fads and the fashion, the fibs and the fallacies of the fitness industry. And I'm not embarrassed to say that because it's been a learning curve and everything I've done in my life has brought me to the position I'm in now, which I'm really privileged and happy about. But what I'm sharing today is I wish for the children that are born now, the children that are living now, the children and the young adults that are growing into mature adults, wouldn't it be nice if they didn't have to go through the silly things that I did? And I don't know how you live your life, but I've done some really stupid things that have affected my health, my fitness, my strength and my longevity and my youngness that I can't go back and change. I'm very privileged that I'm healthy, fit and strong at an old age, but I often wonder, what if when I was 10, when I started exercising, I knew what I did, what I know now, what would I have done differently? And there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of things I would have done differently. So I feel almost like I have a responsibility to at least share the information. I used to have this quest. It was my vision, even the mission statement of the Max Colleges was to positively change the health and fitness of the world. I learned very quickly that the world doesn't want to be healthy, fit and strong. And that's not a derogatory statement because people can choose to do whatever they want to. And we live in a world, interestingly, where we have a lot of sickness, disease, a lot of people are overweight, obese, morbidly obese, a lot of people are depressed, and now a lot of people are very stressed and fearful of being sick or catching a virus. And yet it doesn't seem that there's too much focus on how can I prevent that. We talk a lot about, okay, I've got sick, how can I make sure that I get better? And that's with all diseases. The experts, the medical experts for coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, depression, obesity, cardiovascular disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, all of the major killer diseases, the medical professionals that are studying those diseases seem to be focused on a cure rather than a prevention. And that's why for me, what I'm sharing today is so incredibly personal, but also I believe it has a lot to do with the prevention. I want our kids to grow up healthy and fit and strong and happy, with brains that know how to deal with stress and challenges, bodies that know how to deal with an attacking virus or a disease that they have no control over. And I'd love our kids to have complete control over the diseases that are killing the world that don't have to, the prevention, the things that we can prevent. And if I list out those things again, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, depression, Alzheimer's, dementia, most cancers, stroke, they are all, if not preventable, much less of a challenge if we have a healthy, fit, strong body. And the beautiful thing is, where I used to focus on having a beautiful, fit, strong body, the side effect of being healthy and fit and strong is that your body can also look good. So how do we do all of that? And I get asked every day, and I'm sure that you do too, if you're an exercise professional, if you're healthy or if you're in great shape, I'm sure people ask you, how do I get healthy? How do I get fit? How do I get strong? How do I get lean? And I'm sure you've got an answer. And I certainly have too. But is it possible that whatever I do, whatever you do, isn't going to work for everybody? And what are some of the things that we can't argue about, or we, if you understand anatomy and physiology, you wouldn't argue about? And should they be the things that we focus on rather than telling people what to do? It's pretty easy if somebody says to you, how do I lose weight, or how do I stay young, or how do I get healthy, or how do I put on muscle size? It's pretty easy to deliver information. And the challenge I have with that, of course, is that there's so much contradicting information, again, from the experts right down to the bus driver or the person in the supermarket. Everybody's got an opinion about food and exercise and how to lose weight. So what are the things that none of us would argue about, and are they the things that we should focus on? And I'm very hesitant about this delivery of information, because I get that everybody's very opinionated and people argue all the time about the human body and how to keep it in great shape. But I'm very privileged, because when I ask that question, have you picked a size, have you picked a weight, have you picked an energy level? It's my puppy dog saying hello. Hello, Bentley. A lot of people have not maintained the same weight, the same size, the same energy level for their entire life. There's a lot of people that lose weight and find it again. They get unhealthy, get healthy. They exercise for a bit, get fit and strong, and then they stop exercising, so they get weak and unfit. And they live their life in a yo-yo pattern, up and down, up and down, up and down. I have been very privileged that if you ask me, Roey, have you picked a size, have you picked a weight, have you picked an energy level, and have you maintained that for all of your life, I can very passionately say yes. And I haven't missed a day of exercise, as I shared, since I was 10 years of age. And I'm very privileged because I have great genetics. Yes, my father was Hungarian, my mother was German, hungry German, as we joke about. And I think that there's a little bit of, or there might be a lot of genetic brilliance in my family line. I don't know. And I'm very grateful for that. But I think that regardless of our genetics, that we have to do something to look after the gifts that we've been given. And I've just been really fit, and I've been really strong all of my life. I've been really fit all of my life. Strength was an interesting thing, because I bought into the silliness of what people are still preaching, unfortunately. Women should do light weights for toning. It's only men that should lift heavy things. And of course, if you don't lift heavy, you don't overload your muscles and bones, so you don't get strong. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, your body's got no reason to change. And that's why I asked the question, I wonder if I had learnt that. And I didn't learn that until I met K-Man and I was 30, probably just before that, because I went to a conference in America and I listened to a guy talk about strength training for anti-aging, and that was just before I met K-Man. So I often wonder if I had lifted heavy, if I was really strong from at the age of 10, would how much more healthy, fitter and stronger would I be now? So again, that's why I'm asking passionately, if you want to stay healthy, fit and strong for the rest of your life, what are the things that we won't argue about? And here's the really interesting thing. If I ask you, would your life be better if you're fit, really, really fit? And would your life be better if you're really, really strong? Would you be able to do more? Would you be able to think more clearly? Would you have less chance of getting diseases? Would you have a faster metabolism? Would your body burn up sugar and fat and calories and food faster? Would you have better self-esteem? Would you have better posture? Would you have better skin, hair, nails, eyes, everything to do with the outside of your body? If you're really fit and strong, what happens to your body? And that's the really exciting thing for me. If I'm fit and if I'm strong, and I now understand this in a very simple way. I never pretend that I understand endocrinology or neuroscience or orthopedics or cardiology or even exercise physiology. I'm just learning about it every day. But the fundamentals of all of those, and that's the human body systems. If every single system in your body is really fit and really strong and everything works better, everything works at peak performance, then is it possible that every part of your life would be better? And that's where I get really excited. But if you cut that back to its bare ass minimum simplicity, it's simply get puffed to get fit, lift heavy to get strong. If you're fit and strong, then everything will change. So I'll ask the question again. If you were in peak physical condition, so you're as fit as you could possibly be and you're as strong as you could possibly be, what would be different for you compared to people who are unfit and weak? And that's where I get really excited. So I've been fit all of my life. I've been really strong, started lifting heavy and as heavy as possible from the age of 30. And now at the age, and I'm much, much closer to 60 than 50, I feel very privileged that I feel young, I feel healthy, I feel fit and I feel strong. So when people ask me, Rowie, have you picked a size, a weight and an energy level and stayed that way for your whole life? The answer is yes. And you don't have to listen to what I say. I get that. I'm just going to ask the questions. Does it matter how we get fit? There's so much argument about what exercise you should do. But is it possible that if I get puffed, I'll get fit? And if I'm fit, then all of my body systems will work more effectively. So why do we argue so much about which fitness exercise is better? The only question I would ask is, why would you put in a 50% effort or a 20% effort into your huffy puffy exercise when you want to get 100% result? If you want to get 100% fitness result, shouldn't we put in 100% effort every time we do huffy puffy exercise? Which for me has changed from 45-minute classes teaching group exercise, running half marathons and then full marathons, into high intensity, 100% effort activity, interval sprinting. And I just do as many of those as I can in the day. I'm committed to 4 puffs an hour. So every 15 minutes, I do something that will absolutely make me puff to the point that I can hardly breathe. And because I now have a general understanding of the endocrine system, the central nervous system, the cardiovascular, respiratory system, skeletal and muscular system, I understand why I can be happy every day. I understand why I've got such a positive attitude. I understand why I feel good every day, because every time you puff, you change your brain chemistry so that your brain can think more clearly. It feels happy because you've pumped a dopamine, serotonin into your brain, and your brain keeps growing and changing and getting smarter and wiser because you're pumping brain-derived neurotrophic factor into your brain, which is fertilizer for your brain. So there's a really interesting question to ask. If you want to be fit, why would you put in a little effort if you want a big result? So that's been my biggest change as far as exercise goes, is particularly the last probably 3 years, I've really committed to high intense interval, getting puffed till I can hardly, well, I can't breathe, and then I stop, get my breath back and go again, depending on how much time I've got. So I'm not suggesting that you should train that way. I'm just asking, if you want to get 100% effort, if you want to get 100% result, why would you put in a 50% effort? Is it possible that every time you go for longer than being able to put in 100% effort, you start pacing yourself? If you plod jog, if you work your way through a 45-minute class, if you jog for an hour or half an hour or 20 minutes, none of that is 100% effort. 100% effort comes from your phosphate system, which, when you understand how the human body works, works from an energy point of view. We have a phosphate system, we have a lactate system, we have an aerobic system. The phosphate system lasts for 10 seconds, it's got no waste products and recovers really quickly. The lactate system goes from the 10 seconds through to about 2 minutes. It has a waste product called lactic acid, which of course causes burning sensation in your muscles, and for some people it makes them sick, feel sick, nauseous and or vomit. I don't want to put people into that energy system, particularly people that are starting to exercise, because it makes them feel sick. And once you go past 2 minutes, now you're pacing yourself, you're literally pacing yourself because you're working aerobically. And for if you understand the aerobic system, you can go for hours, you can walk for hours. So why do we focus on the lactate or the aerobic system when the phosphate system is all about 100% effort? And the beautiful thing is that if you constantly pushing yourself in the phosphate system, your body has to catch up. You actually build up a resistance to lactic acid and you build up a strong aerobic system because you're constantly pushing. And it's interesting, if you want to test how fit you're getting, obviously test your resting heart rate. Oh, that's my puppies. They're sitting out in the sun, enjoying the sun. I think one of them disturbed the other one while she was sleeping. Anyway, so if you want to get maximum results in the shortest period of time, and how much shorter can you get than 10 seconds, is it a really important thing to consider that if you want to get the best results possible for your fitness and you want other people to get the best results possible, that you'd push them as hard as possible in that 10-second range. But the beautiful thing, it's only 10 seconds. And is one of the reasons why people don't exercise, that they stop their exercise program, is because it takes too long. And the beautiful thing about 10-second sprinting is not only do you recover quickly, but you don't have to go straight away again. It could be just throughout the day, and that's why I use that philosophy of 4 puffs an hour. So if you want to sprint really hard, and I'll go back to, sorry, the before my puppies had their altercation. If you want to test your fitness, it's your resting heart rate. And if you watch that come down, you'll know that you're getting fitter, but also the time it takes you to recover from being fully puffed. So you work as hard as you can for 10 seconds, go, 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 go. You can hardly breathe. And then how long does it take you to get your breath back? How long does it take for your heart rate to go back to normal? And for some people that can take 3 minutes, might even be 3 hours if you're really unfit. But that then comes down. So you can literally test how fit you're getting. And obviously as you get fitter, your body becomes more effective at burning fat. Your respiratory quotient changes. So your body prefers to burn fat at rest. Because you're working at intense activity, your hormonal system and your central nervous system are firing at peak. So that means that you end up having a really fit central nervous system, really fit hormonal endocrine system, which means then you have greater control over all of the neurotransmitters, all of the hormones that pump through your body for all different reasons. So all the challenges that we have with hormones, it means that we can be in control of our hormonal system versus the other way around. And of course, when you sprint really hard, that puts you into the cortisol, epinephrine, adrenaline, fight and flight drug system, which means again your body gives you what you need to work as hard as you can. When you have to sprint to get away from a threat, your body gives you everything that you need. So you literally pump, you pump the neurotransmitters, which increase your blood sugar levels, increase your blood fat levels, increase your blood pressure so that you can run really fast. Once all of that has recovered, and again, when it's the phosphate system, it recovers really quickly, your body then says congratulations, and you then flush your body with a dopamine reward drug. You did it. Well done. Rowie, you legend. You got away from the threat. Serotonin, which is a satisfaction drug. Endorphins are the happy drug that are painkillers. So not only does your body produce the movement drugs you need to get the hell out of there if you're under threat or you're under stress, but also the pain relieving drug to make sure that it doesn't hurt while you're doing that. And then for me, as I always share, the most important one is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is the fertilizer for your brain. Your brain cells grow stronger connections. You have neuroplasticity, so you can think more positively. And you get neurogenesis. You can drop off the old dead cells that are telling you that you can't do it and you're not good enough and you're too fat and you're too old. And you can start thinking differently because you've grown new brain cells. I think all of that's pretty exciting. How about you? And considering that it comes from a 10-second sprint, and if you're really fit, you'll recover from that 10-second sprint really quickly and you'll want to go again, because all of those drugs are addictive drugs. Serotonin and dopamine in particular, are the pharmaceutical synthesized drugs that the pharmaceutical companies are putting into pill form so that we get addicted to them. But you can get addicted to that in your own brain. So imagine being addicted to something that keeps you lean and fit and healthy and in great shape and looking good for the rest of your life. So that's just from sprinting. If you then add into the very simple mix of getting strong, so yes, get fit, but what about get strong? Again, very controversial topic. So much argument about how often you should train and how many exercises you should do and how many reps and sets you should do. And how about this? How about just get strong? If you use as many muscles and bones in your body as possible at the same time, that's the really important thing, at the same time, you have a major firing of the endocrine system. You have a major firing of the central nervous system because they're the two things that make muscles and bones work. And of course, if you overload, so you lift something that is that you don't think you're capable of lifting, but you give it a crack and you stay within that phosphate system. So if you put that into really simple terms, it just means lift something as heavy as you can, use as many muscles as you can, keep going till you can't do any more. And if you do more than anywhere between 6 to 20 repetitions probably, then you, apart from being bored, you'll be in the wrong energy system. So once you're getting up above 12, 15, up to 20, you'll be working in that anaerobic / lactate system where you may produce some burning sensation in your muscles and you'll start to feel a little bit nauseous or a little bit sick, and I don't want that for anybody. So again, lift as heavy as you can in the shortest period of time using as many muscles as possible. But here's the big one. There's two things we seem to forget as exercise professionals, or we never learned it in the first place. I certainly didn't. Number one is we have to recover. We don't get stronger from lifting heavy. We break down the body. We go into a catabolic state. We break down muscle tissue when we lift heavy. And that's, of course, because we've put stress into the muscle. That then has to recover. Once it recovers, it then regenerates. And once it regenerates and supercompensates, then we're stronger for next time. So literally, whatever weight you lifted, and again, it doesn't matter what you lift because muscles are blind and they can't count. If you lift a rock or a log or a child or a suitcase full of books or a dumbbell, a barbell, a kettlebell, it doesn't matter. If you lift something up off the ground, put it back down again, use as many muscles as you possibly can at the same time, fire up the endocrine, central nervous system, skeletal muscular system. You'll even fire up your cardiovascular and respiratory system, of course. You then have overloaded. If you can keep going past 12, 15, 20 repetitions of an exercise, it's no longer an overload because your body's obviously capable of doing that. The weight's too light. So if you pick something up and put it back down again, do as many as you possibly can, keep going till you can't do any more. The only thing that we seem to have forgotten, apart from the supercompensation process, is that we have to recover from our workout. And when do we go back and do it again? We have this big argument about how often you should train, and then the safety factor comes in. So we talk about getting bigger and stronger and fitter, but if you are broken, if your body's not working because it's got broken joints, or your central nervous system is overloaded and it's tired, or your endocrine hormonal system is too overloaded and it's tired because you haven't given it long enough to recover, then unfortunately we either don't train as hard as we could, we don't put as much effort in as we could, we don't get as fit and strong as we could, and then we go into a downward spiral. So there's the question, how often should I train? I don't want to get into that argument. All I'm asking is this: how long does it take for muscles to recover, central nervous system to recover, endocrine system to recover, and could that be different for everybody? Is it possible that everybody's got a different lifestyle? We have different sleep. How long we sleep and how deep we sleep is different for everybody. Different stress levels and what stresses us out. And of course, when you're stressed, that has an effect on your endocrine hormonal system and your central nervous system. Is it possible that some people train harder than others? So if you lift really heavy, train really hard, put in a really big effort, it's going to take longer to recover. Is it possible that people have different dietary nutrition desires, so people eat different things for different reasons, but also their level of nutrition? And is it possible that all of those things would affect how long it takes us to recover? So if muscles are blind and they can't count, and we lift as heavy as we possibly can, and we keep going till we can't do any more, we use as many muscles as we possibly can, then how long before we're going to do that again? And that seems to be the disconnect, is I'm going to go back and do that next day or second day, or I'm going to break the body up into two pieces and train upper body one day and lower body the next day. There's obviously no understanding there of how the central nervous system works or how the endocrine system works, because they're the ones that fire up both your upper body and your lower body. And they're also the things that take the longest to recover. So the recovery process, the super compensation process, will also have everything to do with our injury risk. And that's the two things that the fitness profession seems to have forgotten, or as I shared, maybe they never learned it in the first place, is that the human body needs to regenerate, recover and super compensate from a workout. And if we give people exercises that are going to break them, then they won't be able to exercise. So there's that big question. The exercises that we give people, are they putting compression forces and traction forces through the joint, which are perfectly safe and functional, or are they putting shearing forces across the joint? And if I'm putting shearing forces across my joint, am I more likely to get injured? So that cuts out, and I don't like to get into this conversation very often, because people always ask me, and I'm sure they ask you if you're an exercise professional, what's a good exercise for my arms, or what's a good exercise for my abs or my legs or whatever. Here's a great question. When does the human body ever work in separate parts? If we work the body as a one piece functional machine, would it be lying down? Would it be sitting down? Would it be in the upright position? And would we be putting shearing forces? I'm just going to say the word shearing forces across a joint, or would we wanting to put compression forces and traction forces through the joint? So here's a great question. The exercises that you're doing, the exercises that you give other people to do, are you aware of whether or not there's enough recovery time, super compensation time, not just for the muscles but also for the central nervous system and the endocrine system? And then do we know that the exercises that we're doing are really safe? Are we making sure that we're not putting any of the joints in the body at risk, so that in the future this person or yourself won't be able to exercise? And they're the big things for me that would be different for me, because I did so many of those silly exercises that put shearing forces across my joints, so my joints got broken. And now I have to deal with that. As an older person, I have to deal with the fact that a lot of my restricting, the things that restrict me from doing the things that I want to do now, is because I've got broken, worn out joints from the stupid exercises I did when I was younger. I would like for that not to happen to our kids, to our teenagers, to our young adults, so that they can grow up to be strong, fit, healthy, mature adults and not have to have broken joints and be in pain. So if I wrap all of that up, it's a very personal thing for me, because is it as simple as being fit and being strong? Being fit, get puffed, get strong is all about overloading every muscle in your body, so that you've got a strong body. And then if you've got strong muscles and you've got strong bones, it means you won't get osteoporosis, you won't get coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis and the killer diseases. It's just, the risk is so close to zero. It is zero. And even if you do get it, you pick up a germ, bug or virus, or you get a disease that you have no control over, is it possible that if you're really fit and really strong, you'll be able to deal with it better? So I always use this beautiful list. If you want your body to be a fat-burning, food-burning, calorie-burning machine, if you want your body to be a virus-fighting, disease-fighting machine, if you want your body to look good and feel good, if you want great hair, great skin, great nails, and then if you want your brain to function at peak performance, so you're constantly filling it up with dopamine, serotonin, brain-derived neurotropic factor, endorphins, oxytocin, the drugs, the neurotransmitters that make us feel good, then do you want to, if you want all of those things, is it possible that you need to be fit and you need to be strong? To get fit, you've got to get puffed. To get strong, you've got to overload every muscle and bone in your body. And why would we want to do that in a long period of time at less than 100% effort? So if you put in 100% effort and you lift as heavy as you can and you sprint as hard as you can and you get really fit and really, really strong, is it possible that the money that you have to invest, or the money that you won't waste on trying to stay young? And again, personal for me, I just feel very privileged that I've gone from 13 to 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 to 60, and I'm healthy, fit, strong, energetic, and I have the same weight, the same size, the same energy level. I've never had to live my life as a yo-yo. losing weight and finding again has not been something in my life. So if you want to live your life as a healthy, fit, strong human being who looks good and feels good, has a stack of energy, and you've got a brain that functions effectively so you can overcome challenges, then is it possible that, and I'm not asking you to listen to me, what I'm asking possibly to do, for you to possibly do, is to learn how the human body works rather than listen to an expert or a personal trainer or an exercise professional. And I'm saying this, and I am one, but I'm asking you not to listen to me. My goal is that the people that are in my life get a really good understanding of how their own human body works. If you learn your anatomy and physiology, if you learn how to get every system in your body fit and strong, if you know what your endocrine system is and how it works, what your central nervous system is and how it works, the skeletal, muscular, cardiovascular, respiratory system and how they work, the digestive system and now the immune system, if you understand how the immune system works, is it possible that you could fight any virus that comes into your life? How about we find out for ourselves rather than rely on a so-called expert? The experts argue all the time. What if you become an expert in your own body? And I'll ask an even more important question. What if you become responsible for your own health, for your own energy levels, for your own ability to look in the mirror and say, I love what I see, I'm looking good? Would it be good to understand that for yourself rather than rely on someone else? What a great question.